Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. A lot of people find their identities in college, but few find something as fundamental as what race they are. Our next guest is the creator and focus of the documentary Little White Lie. She's Lacey Schwartz. Lacey grew up in a family rooted in tradition in Woodstock, New York. Her parents were white and Jewish, and so was she, as far as she knew. When she was young, her parents attributed her dark complexion and tight curls to her great-grandfather, who was Sicilian. The black girls in her high school weren't so sure.
The black girls would stop me in the hallway and say, "What are you?" You know, like I was offending them. And I would just tell them that I was white, that I was, you know, looked like my great-grandfather, who was dark-skinned. I would tell them I was Jewish.
It was not until she applied to college that Lacey began to see the truth. Although she didn't declare a race on her application, she says Georgetown University considered her a black student based on a photograph. After this validating judgment, Lacey began digging around for the facts. What she found were family secrets, lies, and collective denial. For all these years, she has been, as Lacey calls it, passing as white. How and why are the questions of Little White Lie, the documentary by Lacey Schwartz, who joins us now. So nice to have you. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having me.
One of the first lines in the film is that you grew up in a family that, quote, knew who they were. How did you mean that phrase?
You know, I think within families, there's so much of pressure to conform, really, to be who we are, to kind of bond over one thing in particular, not to recognize each other's differences. And I think for my family, we were Jewish, and that's who we are, and that's what our identities were cemented around.
And so you were told you were Jewish, you were raised Jewish, and because they knew who they were, you felt you knew who you were. It didn't occur to you that you were, as you say, passing as white, because really you were passing to yourself, weren't you?
Right. I really had no idea. I mean, as you said, this is such a coming-of-age story, and it's my own coming-of-age story, but it's a story where I grew up, and I believed I was who my parents were. I was an extension of who they were. I didn't have an idea of thinking about myself as something separate from that until, really, I went away to school.
When was your earliest memory of thinking, I look different?
It was really the first memory that I have of somebody else telling me or questioning the way I looked, which was in nursery school when another student said to ask me what color my gums were and to show me his gums.
Show him your gums?
Yeah, show him.
Because he was seeing your gums as somehow
Well, I think
different.
He was seeing my skin and was looking for a way to categorize my skin color and thinking, well, are your gums the color of my gums? Are they different? That's how I will be able to judge that.
Right. And there are various points in your childhood that you refer to in the film where your identity is questioned by others and starts to plant the seed of your own questioning, that nursery school incident, and then at your bat mitzvah, a mm-hmm. synagogue member told you it was nice to have an Ethiopian Jew in their midst.
Absolutely. I mean, I think in the Jewish community in particular, it's hard for us to also imagine ourselves from different from each other. There's been such a kind of reinforcement of this image of being like a white Ashkenazi Jew. And so, you know, when I was growing up in the 90s, the only idea that people had around Jewish diversity was Ethiopians.
And that clip we played from the film, referring to black girls in high school being offended by the fact that you were declaring yourself to be white.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for them, they were looking at me and they were thinking I was passing, probably maybe consciously passing, denying who they were, denying who I was, and that really reflecting on them.
So you got all this way, you didn't know who your biological father was or had any reason to suspect that it was somebody other than the dad who was raising you, right, or that the race would be different than your mother's. If you didn't declare your race on your college application, because that's part of your story,
mm-hmm.
you applied to Georgetown, did not declare a race. Were you already feeling unsure about what it was?
Absolutely. As you said in the intro, that, you know, the power of denial is so strong, and it's a very big piece of my story. And I think for me, like everyone else in my family, I had my own denial around the story, and it happened in different phases. So for me, really, from the time my parents broke up when I was 16, And before that, I was in complete denial. From that phase on, I think I was really just lying to myself and wasn't willing to acknowledge what I really saw. Not until I went away to college was it when I was really able to fully ask the questions.
But you had a biracial boyfriend in high school mm-hmm. who also thought you were biracial. And he says in the movie, white people will believe anything. Want to talk about that?
Do you want to talk about it?
I want you to talk about it.
Yeah. No, I was kidding. Yeah, I mean, I think, it's interesting. His perspective on this story is one of the few people in our town who was kind of a person of color and thinking he was looking in at the situation and thinking, I get this. I see this in a way that not everybody else was talking about. And certainly my family in the kind of three circles out were not talking about it. You know, do all white people believe everything? No. But this idea of if you say it is, we can believe it, we can create our own reality around it, I think is what he's really alluding to.
Maybe if we go to Starbucks, we can really talk about this.
Right.
Listeners, anyone relating to this right now, who else had a reality about yourself right in front of your eyes that your family tried to deny to you, or any other stories of discovering your true racial identity, or maybe who one of your parents was after you grew up? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Lacey Schwartzoff, the creator of the new documentary, Little White Lie. We'll play some more clips from it as we go along here. But how did Georgetown come to categorize you as black without you declaring it?
So as part of my application, I was asked to submit a photograph. So based on a photograph, they admitted me as a black student.
Based on a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And you got accepted as a black student. You got invited to join the Black Student Alliance. And you went.
I did. Yeah. You know, I think, as I said before, I think my real questioning started around the time my parents split up and this bubble that I had existed in was kind of popped at that time. I had that biracial boyfriend who was really in my face, pointing a lot of questions at me. And so by the time I got to Georgetown, I was ready to explore my identity. I was ready to try to figure it out. And after that first year of being at Georgetown and being, you know, not identifying as being black, but actually being a part of the black community for the first time, I then went home and asked my mother some of the real questions.
And you had been seeing a therapist, I guess, mm-hmm. in those early days in college, who was encouraging you to confront your mother. And so here's a clip from the film as Lacey prepares to confront her mother. Lacey's mother is in this clip too, in fact, speaks first, remembering that moment just before everything came out.
Lacey came to me and said, "We have to talk." It was like, oh no, I'm scared.
She initially didn't want to talk to me about it. She told me she couldn't do it at that time. She had to do something else first.
My reaction was, please make her be quiet. Make her stop for a while.
And I told her I had to talk about it. I wanted to talk about why it looked the way it did.
Lacey would ask, how come you never talked to me about it? How come nobody ever talked to me about it?
And I said to her, Mom, you have to tell me.
How come nobody saw that I was different? How come nobody thought enough to come to me and say, I know the truth?
And the truth was that she had had an affair with a black man, Rodney Parker, who was actually your biological father. And he was someone you had actually known growing up, right?
Absolutely. He was somebody my mother met back in the day, and he was around. You know, we lived upstate, but when we came into the city, I would meet him on occasion. He was, as I say in the film, he was a ticket scalper, and he frequently got our whole family tickets to various games and concerts and whatnot.
A family friend.
Mm-hmm.
What did he play any other role in your life growing up? Did he ever pay any special attention to you? Did he know?
I think my thought on it is that Rodney was probably the first person to really figure it out and know. But he, not necessarily. I mean, it wasn't.
Even he had to figure it out so your mom didn't tell him in the first place, Rodney, I'm pregnant with your baby?
I don't think my mother had that thought. I mean, I think, as I said before, like everybody else, I think my mother was very much in denial. I think that she thought that there, I don't think she, my mother had this uncanny ability to not always think things through if she didn't have to. And so I think she didn't realize it as well. And actually, if anything, I think Rodney was probably the one who said to her at some point, you know that that's my child.
Mm.
And that was probably what made her have to stop her own denial.
So did you confirm that through genetic testing or something like this? Because it seems like a matter of suppositions, and just from based on what you're saying, maybe the sequence of events was that you could have been somebody else's child?
Well, my father's child. I mean, you know, I didn't do that because I thought, you know, but honestly, by the time it all came out in the open, it seemed pretty obvious. Many people say that I do look just like Rodney.
Yeah.
So that connection seemed pretty strong.
And your father in the film ends up being, I think it's fair to say, less open than your mother
mm-hmm.
on the subject. He had less to explain because he didn't know the truth that much before you did. I guess he only found out that he wasn't your biological father when you were 16. So here's a clip from the film where you talk to him about identifying as a black woman.
There's certain things that I'm being a little bit vague for a second, but there's certain things that I would like to talk to you about, but there's a difference between saying what I'd like to do and what I need to do. And one of the things that I've realized that I need to say is I need to openly acknowledge to you that I identify as a black woman.
What a surprise.
But I've never said that to you, Dad.
All right, well, you didn't have to.
And the reason I
see the books you read, I see the relationships you have, I see the music you like, I see the entertainment realm that appeals to you. Okay, what else is new? I knew that.
But he never wanted to talk about it with you.
No, he didn't. I mean, obviously, I think when you watch the film, my father has his own pain and his own issues around it. And I think it's a really complicated thing in terms of his relationship with my mother, my identity, and then our relationship and how all of those things connect together.
Why did he agree? Why did your mother agree to have these conversations with you on film?
You know, I obviously can't fully and totally answer that. But the answer that I have is I really think that of the many privileges I experienced, I come from a loving and supportive family, a family that I think definitely made mistakes like most families, but one that supported me through. And I think it became pretty clear when I came to them and said, I'm going to do a film, and really I'm going to do it regardless, but I'd like to ask you to participate in it. Everybody agreed to do so, and I think that that really comes from the fact that in the end they do support me.
I want to take some phone calls for you. People have had, you know, obviously people have all kinds of experiences, and you're a living example of that. I want to tell everybody that Little White Lie, Lacey Schwartz's documentary, airs tonight on PBS's Independent Lens. So is that going to be on Channel 13, Channel 21 locally?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely check your local listings because with PBS it's all on different times, but yes, it'll be on tonight.
Peter in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hello. My mother was Jewish and my father was black. And how it was, because we grew up in Harlem, you know, me and my siblings, we grew up in Harlem. What happens is we were exposed to great people like Dr. Ben Yochanan, and we were exposed to the fact that when someone, especially when an Eskenazi made fun of us because of our dark complexion, we would just refer them to a dictionary or to history because the word Semite generally applies to East Africa. Thank you.
Thank you. And sounds like Peter knew who his father was and knew who his mother was and then had his issues with external reactions to that. Janet in Pine Bush, you're on WNYC. Hello, Janet.
Good morning.
Hi there. What's your story?
Well, my story is that until I was 16 years old, my family told me that my father had died. And it wasn't until I was 16 that I found out that, in fact, he had not died, that my parents had had a bitter divorce when I was an infant. And they did this with the best intentions in the world. I was a happy kid. It was, you know, not a bad childhood at all. It was a wonderful childhood. But it did, when I found out the truth, it did shake me up and just changed my relationship with my mother and aunt who shared the raising of me, because I felt that I had been deceived in mm-hmm. such a profound way. And I discovered the truth when they had become lazy about keeping the story together about how he had died. And I thought, gee, one guy can't have died of so many different things, or he was the unluckiest person in the world, you know.
Lacey, what are you thinking as you listen to Janet's story?
You know, what I'm thinking about is the fact that what motivated me to make this film is really about how much family secrets can have effect on so many of our identities. And really, for me, it is about the process of digging into that, having these difficult but important conversations on them, and figuring out a way to move forward. I totally understand what Janet's saying about how it affected her relationship with people. But for me, I was very much in the space where I was conflicted because I had an amazing, supportive mother and family. But I also realized that I needed to deal with some of the secrets that they had told. So I really believe in the process of it. And I actually would implore that other people check out, we're on our website, are creating a space where people can share their little white lies as well at www.littlewhitelie.thefilm.com and join in a conversation around those and give other people a place to share that and move past it.
Janet, I'm curious, did you then go seek out your dad?
I did, but that was in the days before internet and stuff like that, and I basically had almost nothing to go on except for half of an Army serial number. So, and my mother said she had no idea where he was anymore, and I believe that to have been true. So it was a frustrating search, which I undertook again about 15 years later when I had a child of my own. And I mostly wanted to know everything I could about any medical issues that might be genetically part of her life. But no, I never did succeed in locating him.
Janet, thank you for sharing that story. Now tell us about the website again. You're getting story. You're soliciting stories. I didn't know about this. You're soliciting stories from people.
We're giving people a space where they can actually go online and share their little white lies, their family secrets, and ideally sharing what motivates them to share it, like why they want to dig into it, discuss it, and move forward. And we're going to be building out as this project is going to continue to grow from our PBS broadcast. We're also releasing digitally on iTunes on March 31st and going beyond. So we really want to give people a space to talk about their little white lies and move past them as best as possible.
What are some examples of things that you're already getting?
I mean, the kind of things that Jen just said, paternity, issues with sexual abuse, which obviously is incredibly unfortunate, but also about race, about finding out you have other siblings, all, you know, people who had like mental health issues in their family that weren't talked about, eating disorders, that kind of thing. It really runs the gamut. Their own issues with mental health, drug abuse, that kind of thing.
Benita in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Benita.
Hi, Brian. Welcome back.
Thanks.
I'm calling because I have a very similar story, and it's interesting to me because it's so complex, the matter of identity, particularly when the biracial parents or interracial parents are both Black and Jewish, and how Judaism has such a strong hold, but so does Blackness. And in my own family, that was the situation with my parents. I'm 61 years old, so I was the product of taboo. But I have an older brother who actually, from the time he was 21 and recognized, I was 16, he was turning 21, and decided that he did not want to identify Black. And I did identify as Black. And my brother decided that he would have a better life and was convinced because of the Jewish influence that he would actually have a better standing in the world. That created such a divide. I love my brother, but I have been angry with him and angry with my family about his decision and the impact then that it has upon me to hold his secret. Secrets are really sick, and people are within hidden within that sickness, the darkness of it, the burden that gets carried. And I have allowed him his latitude, but I will not lie for him.
Mm-hmm.
I am who I am, and I'm proud of my Blackness, and I identify I have children. My children identify as being Black, but this is really such an interesting and complex subject. So I applaud Lacey for bringing it, especially because she's younger. And it's interesting to me in the 90s that she would grow up and not know who she was, you know, really who she was, that her parents would have not told her. And I wonder about the anger that she may have felt and how she's dealt with that.
Benita, thank you for sharing. I mean, I think that, first of all, in terms of the 90s, it's amazing to see how many kids are still growing up with this. I think it's a misconception that, you know, that there isn't this racial complexity that still exists, that that's like an outdated thing. I think we're still struggling a lot around that. You know, in terms of my own anger, you know, I hear what you're saying about your family, and I think somebody asking you to lie for them is incredibly complicated. But what I realize, again, going back to, is that I really valued my relationship with my parents, and even though they had made a lot of mistakes, they were relationships that I wanted to treasure. So I needed them to accept me for who I was, and I needed to go through this process, but at the same time, I then needed to accept them for who they were and accept what they could and couldn't do. And that's what I was able to do, and really individuate myself and make sure that I wasn't lying for them. I mean, I think that's very, very complicated, that I wasn't lying for them and that I could therefore move forward in my life. And also hearing your story raises something else for me that I think is so fascinating, because so many people question me about my racial identity and, well, if you're in this situation, how do you connect? And I always say that, you know, racial identity is so subjective, the way you connect to it. And when you're in a family where you, especially kids who are biracial, and two siblings can feel so different, that to me really sums up how complex and nuanced and subjective racial identity can be.
Benita, are you, if I may ask, darker than your brother?
No, in fact, that's you know, there's so many complicated and intricate parts of this, of my own family story. No, in fact, I am fairer. It would be a lot. People automatically assume, because of my first name, that I'm Puerto Rican. And given that I grew up in Bed-Stuy, and, you know, there are so many assumptions based upon my exterior. And so I could have, and I think when I was younger, you know, took on more of what stereotypical language might have been, the intonation of my voice, and, you know, how I walked and how I dressed. And well, I didn't take on those things. Nevertheless, I am firmly rooted in my identity. My community is Black community. So, no, it's real interesting. My brother, his lie is that he's a Sephardic Jew, and therefore, you know, that's why he's dark. And he has made himself, he doesn't live in New York City. I mean, he had to extricate himself, and so he's done that, which is the painful part of the alienation of holding the lie.
Right.
And the,
he went to somewhere where it's easier to pass,
yeah.
It sounds like, right?
And, you know, I want to say one more thing about you asking about my anger, is that I think really I had to dig down and realize it, as you said, I think at a pretty young age, that I was stuck. I was stuck because of the story. I was stuck because of the secrets in my life, and I wanted to move forward, and it was really out of self-preservation that I didn't want to live my whole life being a victim to this story, that I could have gone through and felt justified in my anger, felt justified in people wronging me, but realized that being a victim to this story was only going to really and truly hurt me more than anyone else. And cutting off those relationships would hurt me. So it was really about how can I dig in and move past this as best I can without being a victim.
Benita, thank you so much for your story. It's really, really moving and troubling. You want to do one more? Amazing stories on the board from people, and everybody can go also post your stories to Lacey's website, which is what again?
www.littlewhitelie.thefilm.com, and then click on share.
And Francine in Plainfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Francine.
Good morning. I've been listening to this young woman's story for the past couple of days, and it brings up something for me that is weird, and that I didn't find out until I was 9 years old that my father, who had just passed away, was married and had an entirely different family from mine. He didn't live with us, but I just kind of thought him and my mother didn't get along. And when my mom found out that he died, and it was the day of his funeral, I was told that I couldn't go to his funeral because his family was there. And as I've gotten older, that it was always a weird thing for me, because now I know, you know, I knew at that point, they explained to me that I had 6 sisters and he had 12 or 13 brothers and sisters, and I've never gotten to know those people because I was the secret.
You were the secret, and you were barred from your father's funeral.
Yes. And it's funny, as my daughter gets older, and she's a mixed child, trying to explain to her my family history becomes a little awkward, because now both my mother and my father's dead, so she doesn't know any of her
right.
people.
And yet it sounds like you want her to know everything. You want her to know the actual truth.
I wanted to know where we're from. Because she's biracial, her father's family, she knows everything about them being Irish and where they come from in terms of the U.S. and where they come from in Ireland. But I can't tell her any of that about mine.
Francine, thank you. And I'm sorry for that trouble. And it segues into the last question for Lacey Schwartz, which is that you now have two children of your own.
I do, yeah.
So what's one thing you teach them from the experience that you've had?
You know, my kids are super young, so, you know, they don't actually talk yet, per se. But I think, you know, listening to that story, I just think that kids can handle the truth and the reality a lot better than we give them credit for. And I think if we raise them to feel like the truth is not something that should be stigmatized or should be looked at negatively, but kind of just is what it is, and that they're loved and supported no matter what, that's the best way to do it. You know, my family, from my husband's side and my side, has lots of different people in it for them. And so I'm going to explain the connection and not put any negative connotation around any of it and not hide any of the story. It just is what it is. And I'll raise my kids to teach them about that at those appropriate ages.
Lacey Schwartz, both the creator and the focus of the new documentary, Little White Lie. It will air tonight on the PBS Independent Lens series. Thank you so much for sharing your story. You've obviously touched a lot of people and touched a lot of chords with folks who were inspired to bring out some of their stories, too. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I just want to say one last thing is we're actually going to be doing a live chat following the 10 p.m. premiere here in New York. So at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're doing a live online chat with myself, my mother, and a bunch of the team. So if you go onto my website, click on Discuss, you can connect into that as well.
And that web address again?
www.littlewhitelythefilm.com. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us.